Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in to another Behind the Bets podcast. We're taping this on a Tuesday because we have a busy week. We have to recap a little bit of the NCAA tournament, but then also look ahead to the Masters. Dop, how's your golf knowledge these days?
You know, clubs going up on a Tuesday. You get it? Clubs?
Yeah. Well played.
Thanks.
Well played. I'm impressed. That was not bad. That was not bad. Not bad at all.
That's about as much as I know about the Masters, Doug.
So you're not a golfer.
Not a golfer. You know, I got a big slice in my swing. Yeah, it is what it is.
So we're going to talk with Jeff Sherman, who is on Twitter as Golf Odds. He is the head golf odds maker at the Westgate. So no John Murray. We're going to have Jeff Sherman on. And some of you listen to the podcast remember Sherman. So he knows a lot about golf. He's going to talk about where the book is positioning itself for a few golfers, especially in matchups, and also what bets he's made. And that's the beauty of the business is these guys are allowed to bet. So Sherman fires on games on props or whatever, and he'll share some of that wisdom. What did you think of the game last night, Dop?
I'll tell you what, season 2, episode 4 of Game of Thrones really good last night.
No, that's what I was asking.
That's what I watched. I didn't have a dog in that puppy daycare. So really? I didn't really care one way or the other, in all honesty. I sort of was hoping, just because, you know, being from Michigan, Texas Tech beat both Michigan and Michigan State. I'm the kind of guy that I want to see the team that beat you to be the one to win it all, because then you lost to a champion. You didn't.
Transitive property, you look good.
Exactly. So that's what I was hoping for, but, you know, good for Virginia.
Well, that's the thing. From a sports standpoint, it was an incredible, incredible story. Just think about it. You lose as a 1 seed, right, to a 16 seed comeback. And the show did really well. So all of our picks on the show, we hit everything. Overs, all the props, crushed everything.
Making people money.
One guy even said a 9% chance it goes to overtime. Yeah, we nailed it all. Virginia minus one, you know, things like that. So everything looked good. I gave out a baseball play that lost. So I was the one who lost for best bet. So, yeah. It's when the show zigs, I zag. Like last week, I was the one, and like everyone else had four lost. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was a coin flip game. And so even that sounds right. Saying it's a coin flip game, and gee, it went to overtime, kind of makes us look smart too, right? It's
absolutely.
Like one team won easily, right? So it was an awesome game, and a lot of interesting, dramatic. I mean, it was 3-2, I think, 5 minutes in, so everyone's screaming under, and the public was on under, which is so rare. As we talk about it, the public typically likes overs and favorites. And then the scoring came, and I think every recreational bettor got too enamored with the under from last Saturday. We talked about the over was like a really good play, and the market had overcorrected itself. And the reasons behind it, right? You have 5 days to prepare for an offense. The defense comes in on a Saturday, looks really good, but now it's a short turnaround. The defenses don't have as much to prepare for, and the shooters are just going to hit shots, and they're already adjusted to the big arena, a football dome stadium.
Yep.
So the novelty was more effective on Saturday than on Monday of the same arena. That was sort of the thought process there as well. But, you know, you hit shots. I mean, 3-2 start did not look good. But so we turn the page. We go to the Masters. You're not a golfer. Jeff Sherman is. So we'll get into that. And obviously, don't forget, this is like the week 17 sort of the NBA season, a lot of moving parts. The Chicago Bulls with a G League are actually favored over the Knicks tonight. That should be interesting. So bizarre scenarios, a lot of domino effect in the standings. So I hope everyone enjoys that as we wrap up the regular season and look ahead to the postseason. And speaking of which, we will do a podcast on Thursday looking ahead to the NBA playoffs. I love it. I hope you guys listening love it. So we have that Thursday, Friday to process everything. You got series prices, you got obviously the matchups and all that, the point spreads in game one and other betting angles. So we'll have a really nice pod on Thursday, breaking it all down, looking ahead to the NBA postseason.
Kicking is for losers.
John Murray, too busy, climbing the ranks at the Westgate. No, just kidding. We have to bring in the expert from the Westgate in terms of golf. Jeff Sherman, how are you, my man?
Excellent. How's it going, Doug?
I'm going well. It's going well, man. Thanks for asking. So we turned the page from the national championship game, And now we're officially spring because that means the Masters is here. That's just like the true sign of things. And so let's talk about this tournament. This is something you've been, you know, you are obviously the guy. You bet yourself on futures, and we're going to get into those plays. And I want to get your sort of insight from behind the counter as well. So let's, first and foremost, when you're approaching the field here, what were like the big things you kept in mind as you made the odds for the index odds?
Well, we start this out last August, the day after the PGA Championship ends, actually the same day it ends. And the first thing you don't look at the current form, obviously, back then because you have such a long way to go. So you put a lot of stock into how these guys play Augusta. And so with that in mind, started out Spieth as a 10-1 favorite. He's just got such a solid history there in his 5 years of playing it. Then you just go up from there. And, people tend early on to look for the guys that have had that solid history. So that's how we end up shaping them in the early goings.
Okay, so once you establish the preliminary odds last year, how much do those change? Is it just you're waiting on handle coming in?
Well, we see 8 months' worth of handle, so you have more fluctuations in this tournament than any other tournament the rest of the year. Obviously, the weekly tournaments don't get too much with a shelf life of 3 to 4 days. The other majors have a shelf life of about a month, so with 8 months of shelf life for this, you will find large fluctuations. A couple examples, Rory McIlroy opened at 14-1. He's now the 7-1 sole favorite, only won in single digits, and that's a large move from 14-7. Defending champion Patrick Reed, he opened 30-1. He's been in really poor form lately, and he's up to 60-1, just not attracting too much betting interest. And someone like Alex Noren, he opened 60-1, and he's been really poor himself. And he's all the way out to 200-1, so you find large fluctuations like that over the time.
Well, going back to last year when Reed won it, was he playing well going into the weekend? I don't remember personally. I'm just saying, how much does that factor in? Like you mentioned that there hasn't been that much backing of Reed, so that's why his numbers, his odds have gone up. Because obviously you're managing risk and liability, but how much does recency factor in to, you know, sort of like the likelihood of winning?
Well, it does, and that's why Rory is at 7-1. We're in a very favorable position on him, but there's no need to go higher. If you go higher, that will dissipate. So based on how solid his play has been, you know, we're keeping the odds in a comfortable range, rather low. And same thing with Dustin Johnson at 10-1. After Dustin Johnson at 10, Rose is 12, and everyone else goes up from there. But, you take a lot of stock into the consistent form of recent play, and right now, McIlroy's at the top of that.
Well, obviously, McIlroy's had a chance to win a couple green jackets, has not delivered. He's looking for the career Grand Slam. He's won 4 majors, covering the other 3, but not this one. 4th is his best finish. And how much do you think, like, the pressure or all that weighs in or not at all?
Well, he's been through things so many times now that, he's got the last 5 years, he's been top 10 on this course. I think he's playing the best golf that he's played in his career at this point right now. And so I think he can handle that pressure. There's other guys you see that with. I'll give you an example, Paul Casey. The guy's got fantastic form. He's a great matchup play, but he doesn't win that often. He tends to choke under pressure more often than not when he sees his name up at the top of the leaderboard. So McIlroy, I'm not too concerned about. That's the toughest thing, is to try to find these golfers that have that consistent form that can handle the pressure that have been there. Rory's won before. He's won big tournaments. So I don't have any doubts about his ability.
It's funny, and especially on the heels of Virginia, and I remember talking to a friend a couple weeks ago, the first round we were watching games, and he's like, Virginia never does this, never wins, tournament time. I'm like, just because it hasn't happened doesn't mean it won't. And we saw that with Phil. Phil finally got over the hump, although we're still waiting on the U.S. Open. So I do believe some of this stuff is a process. And so McIlroy obviously has demonstrated an ability in other tournaments, and it's only a matter of time. I agree with you. You said this is the best golf he's been playing. Why is that?
Well, he's just consistent with his form at the top, and all aspects of his game are just clicking right now. I mean, he's just obviously hits the ball a long way, but his approach to the green, his putting's been great. Just everything about his game. He won the Players' Championship, and that's considered the 5th major. So that's obviously a big event with one of the strongest fields in golf. And he's been top six every other event. I discount the match play. If it's not a stroke play event, you know, I don't put too much stock into how these guys did with that. But in the stroke play events, he's been absolutely fantastic. And that's the thing. When you're betting these futures, the one thing you want to look for is to give yourself a chance with a few guys on Sunday. And there's so many guys that have inconsistent form. If you can find these guys with some type of consistency, you just want to have the opportunity to cash that ticket come Sunday.
So let's talk about the variables. Let's start with the weather. That's a big storyline. We're taping this on Tuesday morning in Vegas time. So how much does the current forecast affect your odds making? And then also we'll move the needle to the handicapping.
Well, not so much the odds aspect. These odds have been up so long and they're pretty much ironed out on the outright markets. What it affects is the propositions that I did, the winning score, the lowest round. You know, they're getting rain today on Tuesday, and it's supposed to soften the course up for the week. And it seems to have ideal conditions for the weekend. Maybe a Saturday, a little bit of a bump, but nothing too bad. So when I first set the over-under score, I was looking at something like 275.5. Every year these guys are getting better. The competition's better. They just go lower if there's no adverse conditions. But with the beneficial weather this week versus previous years, I went a stroke lower at 274.5. And same thing with lowest round shot. Just about every year booking this, it's some form of 65.5, and you vary the price on it. This year I went 64.5 over 45 as a stroke lower than what we normally do just because of the weather conditions.
How much do you think, like, who's hurt the most for the weather? Like, are you looking at tee times for some of this stuff?
Yeah, but it looks like as far as the detriment to the tee times, it looks like it's mostly going to be Saturday, and so that's a reshuffle, not the first and second rounds, where you might get caught in an afternoon wave due to some wind. That really has the largest effect in the Open Championship, so I don't see anything at this point that's telling for a variable in the tee times.
Let's talk about Tiger here. Has won this green jacket four times, but has not won since 2004, is it? It's been a while, and he knows the course well. First of all, in a vacuum, because Tiger's what, the fourth favorite? In a vacuum, where would you put him if there were not, if he was not Tiger Woods and the liability and the mystique and all that? Not necessarily mystique, because that's part of the handicap, but if you had zero liability on Tiger, where would he be in a vacuum?
Looking at his statistics and everything he's doing, I would have him at 25-1, basically equivalent to what we see with Brooks Koepka's odds.
Interesting.
Very similar at this point. But like you mentioned, Tiger Woods gets betting support unlike anyone else. And right now he's third in ticket count, but number one in money wagered. And some of that is due to we took a $10,000 wager on Tiger at 12-1 about a month ago. And we've actually got so much betting support on everyone else that I'm able to bump him up to 14-1. We do have liability on Tiger, but he is number one in money wagered, so that always happens during the majors.
Who's betting 10 grand on him at 12-1?
It was one of our house guests that bets futures in other sports, so you know, we can extend something like that. Usually we take to win around 50,000 on these golf major outrights, so we took a little larger one on that one.
What is your assessment of Tiger's game and chances right now?
Well, I'm surprised how, after the layoff between the wraparound season, he obviously won the Tour Championship last year, which a lot of people didn't know if he had it in him to get a win. He's played solid golf the start of this season, plenty of top 20s. He just placed once outside the top 20, 30th at the the Players Championship. But his game is pretty solid, and it wouldn't surprise me if he were competing. I don't expect him to win this week, but if he's up there on the leaderboard, I don't know if he's going to keep four rounds together, but almost like the way I see Jordan Spieth right now. I don't know about Spieth keeping four rounds together, but Tiger's game is solid, and if he has it and keeps it together, he can definitely compete and make it interesting on Sunday.
It is really interesting. I remember someone saying it's you know, Tiger doesn't just move the needle in golf. He is the needle. And it makes total sense, given that is. But I'm surprising that you're saying you would put him in a vacuum the same as Koepka.
Well, he's playing about the same golf as Koepka. So if you look at matchups, and that matchups are the great indicator for a guy's true power rating versus mm-hmm. the outright market. And if you had Tiger Koepka, to me it's about a pick a matchup right now. Tiger's just a small underdog in some of his matchups to Rose, McIlroy. We actually got some sharp play against Tiger in the matchups, but he's not that large of an underdog to some of the top guys. And the guys in his odds range, a little bit higher, and that's what you can tell. He's matched up against some guys like Fleetwood or Koepka, and he's about pick 'em against those guys, and they have a little bit higher odds than he does.
Do you think he'll win another major? I'm in the no camp.
You know, I have that up right now where we put up propositions on how many career majors he's going to win by the time he's 50. And right now, over under a half, the over is minus $1.50 and under is plus 130. We've gotten some over support on it. I would lean to the no because the strength of the fields now, there's so many good young international players. Just the depth of the field is so tremendous versus when he was winning in the early 2000s, and it was a few guys he was competing against. Now you have these guys that all tried to model their game after him, and they approach the game with the same type of mindset that he did, being aggressive and trying not to be fearful and you know, having that mental edge over your opponent. So all these guys that he's going against are almost mini versions of him to some degree, and it just makes it that much tougher for him.
And if he were to win a major, which one would it be?
Well, I would have to point to the Masters.
That's
first
why
of
I'm
all.
Asking.
It's a limited field, so we only have 87 golfers this week, and you can throw some of the veterans out. So he's got more of an opportunity there. Where if you look at the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, you go down to right near 150 in the field, and some you have some other quality golfers that can be outsiders that can win those events. So the limited field helps here. The same course helps here, a course that he knows very well. So if he wins another one, I think it would be this one. You know, they're playing Pebble Beach for the U.S. Open, and he's won there before. We know he had the record there. But I just think it's most conducive just because of the size of the field for the Masters.
Yeah, and his familiarity with Augusta, obviously. But others are familiar, too. Okay, so we've covered that. What about matchups? Any matchups that you think stand out? Now, I know you're making the odds, so you would adjust the odds, but in terms of someone on our side of the counter, what matchups stand out?
Well, we put up we have 92 matchups available this week. 82 of them are the market screen matchups, which we do so we can offer everything competitively. Then I'll make a few extra ones to allow people to parlay some that don't get tied into everyone else. But there's a few that I played on the screen this week. One of them that stood out to me right when I saw it was Charles Howell against Danny Willett. I like Howell. He's had a fantastic season. He's got the statistics to fit this course. A lot of people know that he's from the Augusta area. And Danny Willett's a past champion, but he's been in really poor form. And I wouldn't have matched those two guys up. You have Charles Howell at 80-1, Danny Willett, I'm 250-1 right now. And I don't look to match guys up in that type of category. So I think that Howell should be a larger favorite than he is. I laid $1.60. I think it's up to $2 now. But that's one of the larger mismatches that I saw on the betting board.
Chucky Three Sticks?
Yep.
Such a good nickname. Okay, and then you also posted on Twitter, because you were sick of getting a bunch of texts from guys like myself, your bets on the futures market: Justin Rose, 14-1, John Rahm at 20-1, Matsuyama at 50-1, and Woodland at 100-1.
Right, and Rose is a guy that you look, and he's got the game. He's always there. He's sure. You know, top 10 generally every year there. He's had an up and down season this season, but I'm not too concerned about that. Some of these guys just find their game at Augusta that have that type of history. So I think he'll be there come Sunday. I think that John Rahm offers the best value for these guys at the top of the odds board under this established market that we're dealing with as of today. Finding John Rahm at 20-1, in relation to everyone else, from McIlroy at 7 to the guys maybe 30-1, I think he's the best value based on the start of the season that he's had and his type of game, the way he attacks the par fives. So I really like Rahm a lot. Going down to Matsuyama, I've got him listed at 30-1. So if I find someone that far off of what I'm offering it, Matsuyama has some of the statistics that fit Augusta well. He's third right now in strokes gained tee to green, and that's important. You look at greens and regulations, strokes gained tee to green, and strokes gained overall. Those are three of the things. A lot of people think that Augusta, and you have to be the great putter, and everyone knows about Spieth's putting ability. But the best thing to handicap this is for is approach shots to the green, because these guys got to know where they need to put the ball for their best opportunity to putt. So that's something you need to look at handicapping this course. And going down to Gary Woodland at 100-1, I always look for some outsiders. And Woodland has had a great start to the season. He's fifth in greens and regulations, eighth in strokes gained tee to green. And just with his consistency, I think he's one of the guys with longer odds that might be able to sneak it up there.
You know, it's funny, when I ripped off the names you listed, Rahm's, that's where I'm leaning, as my guy. I just think he's so good, has it all, and it's just a matter of time. So when you're getting 20-1, like, is he going to win a major? He's going to win one of the next 20 majors. I say yes.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I was just talking to one of the guys here about that, and I said, if they played this tournament under these conditions over the next 20 times, I would expect Rahm to probably win one of the next 14. So I think that getting him at 20-1 is value based on conditions today.
That's the way to look at these things, right? And so much of recreational bettors are approach it like, and especially with like props on like a national championship game last night, like so-and-so, can he get over 4.5 rebounds? Well, yeah, can he, but where's the advantage? Now, if you don't have a computer model like a lot of sharps do, and you just have to think it through like that, and I think that's your answer right there. Like, will he win in this pairings, this settings, one of the next 20? And like that's where I was coming from.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people do that, though. They've been doing that with Ricky Fowler, and he hasn't yet.
Right,
and
right.
They keep going back to that. And that's the one thing, though, is people are, you know, he's one of our liabilities. Fowler's right now number 2 in ticket count, number 3 in money wagered. And until he wins that major, he's going to continue to be like that because he gets the betting support.
You mentioned the matchup with Chucky Three Sticks. Any other sort of props, like top 10 guys, top 5 guys? Because I know you have a smorgasbord of options with the Masters.
Yeah, you know, we did the winning score, top 5, top 10, top 20. Well, guys make the cut. The one thing I might be looking for myself is John Rahm to finish top 20. It's a bit of a price, about $1.80 or so you have to lay, but it's a lot of leeway for someone that I really think can win. And, you know, the hardest thing about this is when, you know, in the Las Vegas market, we don't have each way wagering available like they do in Europe, where you can finish top 5 and get paid off the places like that. So you can bet the propositions that way of top 5, top 10, or top 20. And you got a lot of leeway with the top 20 on some of these guys, and with the limited field. And like I mentioned, you could take some of the guys, the Ian Woosnams, Larry Mizes out at the end and reduce the field down. And you could probably get to a point where, you know, you see the cut prices on these guys, and the prices are not like the other majors. They're strong favorites to make the cut just because of how this field is made up.
I took a bath last year on a matchup with Tony Finau after he jacked up his ankle on the par 3 Wednesday, and I just thought there was such value fading a guy who couldn't even walk, it looked like. And of course, the guy like pops his ankle back into place and shoots lights out of the opening day and even closed strong. He's got some buzz this year at 35-1. Where do you stay? What's your opinion on him?
Well, he's his statistics this season have not been as solid as I expected. I thought he'd be doing a lot better, but he's been making some swing changes, and I don't think he's fully gotten himself to the point where he's comfortable yet, and you're seeing it in his results. So even though he finished 10th as a debutante last year, you know, he's not a guy that I'm looking for. The general public has been betting him over the last 8 months. He's about a break even for us right now, but just his current form leaves too much to be desired for me.
Let's talk about Spieth, because this guy was all world for a stretch, and he's just really kind of fallen off, to be honest. And what do you make of him in terms of, I mean, you have matchups with him and Tiger. You have matchups with him, and I've seen Molinari out there. That's pretty wide range. Where do you stand on Spieth?
You know, he was the toughest one this week going in because he's got the best Augusta history in the last 5 years, but his current form, he hasn't finished better than 30th this season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tough one to figure out, but he's got so many facets to his game that he's got issues with right now. You could see it in the driving. He's not accurate with that. He's getting himself in trouble off the tee. His putting isn't the type of putting that we've become accustomed to with Jordan Spieth. So I'm not too high on him this week because I think from what I've seen, I don't see him correcting all those issues in this short amount of time. Now, can he compete there? Obviously, because he takes to the course so well. But my expectations are he's not going to get this all corrected. We have, though, seen some sharp play on him in matchups. So I think some people's thinking out there is, based on how poor he's doing, we over-adjusted a little bit too much the wrong way against him, and now they're supporting him in some of the matchups, and the general public supporting him in the outrights. I took a $6,000 wager on him at 20-1 on this past Saturday, and that dropped him to 16-1. So amongst the odds competitors at the top of the board, he represents our largest liability right now.
So a lot of times in these situations, when there's basically a scenario that you just presented, it could go both ways, right? It could be his familiarity with the course, he has all the tools in the bag, versus how he's playing now, which is not good. I kind of like almost play it out in my head and which seems more believable. Like, come Sunday, are you being like, you know what? I should have seen it. Spieth knows this course so well, blah, blah, blah. I should know that he's going to play well. Does that feel more right? Then the other one was like, look, there were no signs he was playing well. He's just a name that's, frankly, was established a long time ago, not recently. And which feels more right and more likely, right?
To me, that feels more right to factor in what he's doing current form,
right,
because of the issues I've talked about, right? And, you know, I definitely wouldn't look for him in the outright market because, he's had a couple rounds where he's done well. But he hasn't put the four rounds together, and there's some point that his game has gotten away from him that's caused him to have hiccups. I mean, when you look at it, and if just like you talked about with Tiger, if you took his name away, what would his odds be? About 25-1. If you took Spieth's name away and looked at his current form, he'd be higher than that, even with his Augusta history. Because if you looked at that, and it's just like I mentioned with Alex Noren, here's a guy that was well-supported, opened him at 60-1. His current form is so poor that he's up to 200-1. So if you took Spieth's name away, it would be higher than what he is right now, but he gets the betting support because of his history on this course.
A lot of times in sports, we try to like come up with analogies, right? Or just, hey, this feels like so-and-so, like a team making a run in the tournament feels like Duke 4 years ago, whatever it is, right? Have we seen a guy like Spieth who's a little bit of an established name and coming to Augusta, not playing well at all, and then all of a sudden being able to flip the switch and get it done at the Masters?
Well, the only one that I can say that with is a few years ago when you had with Tiger. When he finished 17th in 2015, you know, he was coming back after missing a year, and he wasn't playing well going into the tournament, and he ended up exceeding a lot of people's expectations and finishing 17th. And it's not near winning it, but it's the same type of thing you're talking about. There were no signs to show that he could do what he did that year. So that is the one analogy I can think of off the top of my head.
Nice.
Pay that man his money.
All right, so let's talk about the tickets that you could be paying out with the sharps and what they've been betting on. Let's go matchups and maybe some of the futures that stand out, the guys you really respect.
Well, when you look at from the sharp perspective, we take about 95% sharp play on the matchups, and the outright market is about 95% general public play. So it's really concentrated on the matchups and propositions. And I mentioned we have 92 matchups currently up, and if you look consistently on the action we've taken so far, it tends to be on Ricky Fowler in his matchups and going against Tiger, Francesco Molinari, and Garcia. So those are the four guys that have really been concentrated here in the matchup so far. And, public might want to look into that and direct some of their action that way if they're interested in getting involved in the matchups.
And no futures in terms of from sharp play?
I haven't really taken much. It's just, like I said, it's 95% general public, and I haven't had anyone really get involved in that market that I've had to adjust the odds based on something that is along the line of matchup play where they're on a Ricky Fowler in the matchups and they're betting him on the outright market. That type of thing hasn't happened.
I don't like to give away all my trade secrets, but I do have a golf guy that sends me his plays, and he's been pretty sharp. I'm not going to lie. I've hit some nice outright winners. So this tournament, let me know what you think. Oosthuizen, Day, Sergio, and Koepka.
Oosthuizen's been playing great lately. His top 10 his last couple tournaments, including the match play, which, you know, I mentioned I don't put too much stock in, but his form has been pretty solid, and he's got a couple decent years at Augusta, and his odds have dropped. You could have recently found him at 60-1. Now he's 40-1, so I can see that. Sergio, I'm anti-Sergio. I'm still shocked that he had won here. He doesn't have the greatest history here, and I know people talk about temperament with John Rahm, and maybe that's a detractor for him to win, but Sergio's the same type of way. We've seen it this past season where he's gotten hot and lost it on the golf course, and he just leaves a lot to be desired. He'd be a guy I look to fade. And who are the other two that you mentioned?
Day and Koepka.
The concern I have about Day is, he withdrew from a tournament earlier this season because of his back, and that's the one thing about him is he's got an injury history, mm-hmm. and so I'm not so keen to be involved in him. Koepka has been fabulous in the majors, and his current form hasn't been as solid. I know he said that he's been going through losing some weight or gaining some weight, I believe. So I think there's been some swing changes to what he's been doing, but he always steps up on the big stage, so it wouldn't surprise me if he's there competing on Sunday.
Yeah, so Day and Koepka, 25-1 at last check, and he said the bomb long shots are Norin, Stanley, and Olesen. Or Olsen?
Yeah, Norin is in very poor form. I've bumped him all the way up to 200-1. Kyle Stanley's had a rough start too, and I think I'm up to 300-1. And who was the last one?
Olsen or Lesson?
Oh,
I've never heard of.
Yeah, Torbjörn Olsen. He doesn't attract too much betting support here. And even if he is in solid form, I've got him at 250-1 just because he's such a favorable position for the book that his odds can be higher than what you see on the market or what he should be based on what his play is. And out of those three guys, I'd have to support Olsen over the other two based on what I'm seeing currently.
All right, my man, that should do it for me. I know you get exhausted this week. Everyone's blowing up your phone. You have a bunch of radio hits, TV hits. So appreciate your taking the time to come Wally Pip Murray for the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me on. Good time.
All right, man, enjoy the tournament.
Thanks, you too.
On your mother's house or not, with my mother in it.
Bob Lee never gets old there on the podcast.
I'm not sure I totally understand the meaning behind that one, but it seems egregious.
Yeah, so it's from the movie Two for the Money, which is Matthew McConaughey was a handicapper and tout. And is it Pacino? Yeah. Pacino is his like mentor, if you will. And Walter is the guy, and he's like, give me your plays. He's like I think it was a two-team parlay for the Super Bowl. And he goes, would you bet your mother's house or something like that on it? He goes, with my mother in it.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Also, what role can Matthew McConaughey not do to just perfection?
I've told the story, and it was with Kai, and I think it's worth telling again because, we're at the end of the podcast. So that movie, if you order a movie through cable and watch it at home, sometimes you get like the unedited version.
Yep.
Where it's basically the same, but there's some scenes or whatever. So I was living in Las Vegas at the time, and from LA, and I would go home and visit my mom once in a while. And it's like, you're not going to go to the bars of your mom. Like, what are you going to do on a Friday or Saturday night for the weekend or whatever? So I'm like, let's just rent a movie. And I was like, hey, it's a gambling movie. I've been wanting to see it. Let's watch it. And I mean, look, my mom raised five boys, like nothing she hasn't seen or heard on TV, especially. And so I'm like, oh, it's gambling. I live in Vegas. It's like, I'm sure there'll be some F-bombs here and there, nothing crazy. So there's like that scene, and you didn't watch the movie. Okay, so Walt Pacino basically hires him a escort. And it was like, all right, well, we know escorts exist. But like the scene was the unedited version.
Not the kind of scene you want to watch with your mom.
I left the room. I was looking for the remote, and like, so it was uncomfortable. But my mom was laughing.
Right? Sorry, Mama Kazarian.
Yeah, it was one of those things where she laughed it off. But yeah, I did not anticipate that. Because it wasn't X-rated.
Right. Right.
It wasn't, you know, that kind of movie. So that was a little uncomfortable.
That's funny. Yeah.
So anyways, we did not have Bob Lee voice that scene. We had him
voice the other part. That's fair. Right, yeah.
Okay. So that's going to do it for this podcast. Special thanks to Jeff Sherman. And we will have, like I said, the NBA playoff podcast on Thursday. And honestly, there's just nothing better than the first round of the playoffs. Well, I don't know. I like every day in the NBA postseason.
And when we do that first round of the playoffs podcast on Thursday, that is when we're going to unveil who it is that won a couple of t-shirts. So you still have a few days left.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I forgot.
Days left to get your pictures in at Doug ESPN. If you got pedicures, send along a picture of it with a receipt or a newspaper or something showing that it did, in fact, happen sometime either this weekend or over the beginning of the week.
All right. I'm so glad you brought that up, Dop. I'm embarrassed. I should have talked about it at the top of the show. We have a winner so far. Where is us gentlemen? Carl, good to see you. Carl sent a picture in with the pedicure photo and a receipt circling the date. So Carl will be getting a t-shirt sent to him in the mail. Very, very nice. And reading his direct message, he also had UVA over Texas Tech for plus 500. He did a matchup kind of thing before the Final Four.
Yeah.
So nailed that 5-1. Good thing I didn't respond when he was asking me, is it worth hedging? So good job, Carl. I did that on purpose. I wanted you to handle that. So Carl in Denver, nice pedicure, nice t-shirt, and nice winner on the ticket there. So well done. And I've really enjoyed the pedicure.
Love it.
Little buzz that we've been created. So I think people are a little taken back when I'm like tweeting about like gambling odds and like some of the tournament game and then a picture of a guy's foot.
No big deal. No big deal.
So send them in. I got t-shirts to send you. Appreciate everyone's loyal listenership and also loyal viewership on the show. I'm getting a lot of positive feedback and we appreciate it from everyone. All right. That's going to do it for this pod. Again, Thursday. And as Dop said, still plenty of time to send in your pedicure photos.